Coming up on Broadway Radios, this week on Broadway, we talk about the Tony Awards wrap-up. Please stay tuned.
A delivery woman. She came in with a handcart full of packages. She was an old-school butch.
Someone just came in the door, like no one I ever saw before. I feel... I don't know where you came from. I wish I did. I feel so dumb. I feel... your swagger and your bearing and the just right clothes you're wearing. Your short hair and your dungarees and your lace-up boots and your keys. Oh, your ring of keys.
Hello and welcome to Broadway Radios, this week on Broadway for Monday, June 8th, 2015. My name is James Marino, and in the broadcast this evening, we have Peter Felicia and Michael Portantier. Peter is a theater journalist and historian with a number of books. His most recent is The Great Parade, which is available everywhere. His columns appear at MTI, Critcherland, Masterworks, Broadway, Broadway Select, and many other places. Good evening, Peter.
Hi.
Hi. Peter's joining us by phone. We were having a little bit of a technical difficulty, so that's why he might sound a little different tonight than the other times. Also with us is Michael Portantier. Michael is a theater reviewer and essayist whose work appears at Talkin' Broadway, The Sondheim Review, and Broadway Stars. He is also a theatrical photographer whose photos have appeared in the New York Times and other major publications. Good evening, Michael.
Good evening.
So last night was...
Something happened.
The 2015 Tony Awards. And this is our... if we had some Fox News graphics, we'd have the NFL... post-game report wrap-up type of thing. But the 69th annual Tony Awards were last night at Radio City Music Hall, and the three of us would like to talk a little bit about them. So, Peter, why don't you start us off? What did you think about the whole overall presentation?
The whole overall presentation? I thought it was pretty good. I do think this was one of the best seasons we've had in a long, long time. So as a result, the numbers on the awards reflected that. A lot of people have complained a great deal about the hosts, about the fact that a lot of people didn't get on to give their acceptance speeches as much as they should have, et cetera, et cetera. You know, all the reasons why people had a hard time with these awards last night. But I'm sobered by the fact that some years ago I went to the Tony website to look for a piece of information. There was a question, why do you watch the Tonys? And 62% of the people said to see the numbers, and only 18% of the people tuned in really to see who won. Other people tuned in to see dresses. But, I mean, the thing is that the production numbers is what they really want. A lot of people say, well, then why don't they just do a show where they just show the numbers, they don't do the awards. You really can't expect, though, that given the ratings of these shows, that the audience might tune in twice to see two specials on Broadway. They might, but I wouldn't quite depend on it. And you really can't expect people who are outside of the city, who don't pay attention to Broadway, to suddenly pay attention that night to wonder, wow, is it going to be Victoria Clark or Judy Kuhn? I mean, you just can't. They don't know who they are. And it's a miracle that the show does as well as it does. So as sheer entertainment, despite excesses with our hosts and despite a little too much emphasis on gay matters, which indeed alienates a good deal of the audience as well, I thought it was a very successful show in terms of the numbers coming across.
Michael, what did you think?
Yes, overall, I would say it was better than the past 2 years or so. I did think – I'm not even an Alan Cumming fan, but I thought that he and Kristen had a huge amount of chemistry, and I thought they were very good overall. I thought there were a lot of funny bits. I absolutely loved what Kristen did when she didn't win. I thought that was hysterical. And I really do think they had a lot of chemistry, and I thought that the, you know, I mean, we've discussed this a little bit last time. I really do not object per se to the inclusion of numbers from shows that aren't nominated, but it's just a question of balance against other things. And here's, you know, this is interesting. I was thinking yesterday, and I to myself, and then I asked someone, and they said the, I guess, obvious answer. When you think of how many people see Broadway shows in a year, that's a very, very large number of people. And you would think that that might translate into better ratings, especially nowadays when the audience is so broken up between so many different shows on so many different stations. You would think percentage-wise that it wouldn't do that bad. But as, of course, as someone pointed out to me, there are many, many people who come to see shows but don't – they might see one show a year, or they might see two shows a year, and the shows they see might be The Lion King or Wicked or things that are not new. So they don't care about the race aspect of it. And they don't know as much about the nominees, as James just said, as compared to, for example, the Oscars. And here's another thing. Someone pointed out that the Tonys were on opposite the – is it the NBA Finals? Someone said, well, one time the Oscars, you know, were on opposite something, but they generally avoid that. But it's still – there's no comparison, because like it or not, the movies are a part of popular culture in a way that Broadway is not, certainly not anymore, and maybe never was to that extent. I mean, anyone can go to see, you know, any movie in so many different ways. So I guess that's – there's really no comparison there. And that's why they would probably never schedule the NBA Finals opposite the Oscars.
So I think that they're very different markets. I don't think there's a Venn diagram, you know, other than a handful of folks that would be watching both. And that's not to denigrate either one of the, one of the audiences there. It's just different folks, different strokes for different folks in this case.
It's interesting. It kind of goes more in one way. I mean, among the people who would watch the Tonys, I think there was a fairly large percentage who would also be interested in the NBA Finals. But if you take all of the people who would be interested in the NBA Finals, the percentage of those people who would also be interested in the Tonys is probably extremely small. So it's not even comparable in that way. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hope that makes sense.
So one of our listeners sent me a message, and he said that he's really excited to find out what number Finding Neverland's going to do next year on the Tonys. So what do you think?
I think it'll be closed by then.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah, I expect, even though the grosses are very good now, I think they will drop off tremendously. I'm not sure that number did them any favors either. It looked pretty ghastly with Kelsey Grammer close up. But who knows? Harvey Weinstein might do a Howard Kagan and just keep his show running no matter what happens, just to save face. But I don't think we're going to see Finding Neverland at this time next year.
Yeah, I said
but
that
too.
If
we do, it'll be on. It will be on. Yes.
I said that as well. That I think that Finding Neverland would, you know, I'd be surprised if it lasts till January 2016. Mm-hmm. But that. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, they've broken all the norms already by being on the Tonys. Even if it's closed on Broadway next year, what's to say that they're not going to have another number on the Tonys next year?
Sure. I understand that.
So I agree with both of you that, yeah, I don't think it'll be around next year. But also, boy, I mean, aside from how horrendous the number was, how embarrassing was that, the J-Lo intro? And even Nick Jonas, I mean, he didn't screw up in a huge way, but didn't he look extremely disinterested?
I'll never forget being at a performance where school children came to How to Succeed. afterwards, and the cast members on the stage. And if you thought he looked disinterested last night, you should have seen him then.
Oh.
I don't think he really throws himself into things very, very much. The J-Lo thing, of course, brings up the fact that it's such a shame that people who have nothing to do with Broadway are presenting on this show. And it's so stupid because, I mean, I'm telling you right now, if Bernadette Peters, Patti LuPone were on the Country Music Awards, I would not watch. I'm not interested in country music. So it's such a self-fulfilling, defeating prophecy to do these type of things, thinking that, oh, wow, people are going to tune in to see her. They're not. They're not.
Which
Why
seems to
they?
Be obvious to everyone except the producers.
I know, them, yeah. Right, yeah. Right, true.
So this brings up another point, is that the ratings, the overnight ratings that were talked about this afternoon were hovering in the 6 million area, some of the worst ratings ever. And Terry Teachout, who is the chief theater critic for the Wall Street Journal, was mentioning, at what point or another does CBS give up on the Tony Awards, and then what happens? And it's something that we've talked about for a few years, is what will be the next step of the Tony Awards? And again, just like any other, you know, if this were any other corporation and you had year after year after year of bad performances, wouldn't you fire the team? Wouldn't, you know, the Tony Award producers and the folks who are doing this year after year? And, who's going to take it to the next level, and what will happen there?
No, I think it has more to do with the fact that theater coverage is way down. It's too expensive for most people. People are, in essence, boycotting it by not watching the awards. That's not a conscious decision, but my point is that to be interested in Broadway, if you're out there in the hinterlands, you're essentially saying, this is something that's beyond my reach. I cannot travel to New York to see it. I cannot afford the hotel prices. I cannot afford the theater ticket prices. I can't afford to certainly sit in the best seats because the best seats are now premium prices. So I am just going to shut my iron door on the theater. And I think that's one reason why the ratings are way down. People just want to pretend it doesn't exist because it's something beyond them. It makes them sort of feel like a failure because they can't afford it, because they can't be a part of it. So when that happens, you just ignore it. Now you might say, well, wait a minute, then how come 13.1 million people saw shows this year if there's so little interest? And that, I will admit, is a very good rebuttal. But on the other hand, as Michael said, and I agree with him, just because you come to see Wicked doesn't mean you're going to tune in to see whether or not Fun Home is going to beat an American in Paris. So it's really not a very healthy industry, despite the way the figures are skewed at us. And even as William Goldman said in The Season, the 1969 book, every year will be a record-breaking year in terms of money because they just raise the prices. And that's all there is to that. I mean, the attendance you can't get around. I mean, yes, great, good. I'm delighted the 13.1 million people went through the doors. I wish they could have gotten into those doors for less money. I wish that more people would have come because we certainly can think of at least 10 shows where you could have brought 200 people on any given night and everybody would have been very easily accommodated. So there is still something wrong with the industry, and the high prices I blame for everything, and I think that really impacts the Tonys as well.
You know, someone posted a link to an article that that Mark Harris wrote for Entertainment Weekly, and it's can I just read this? This is just part of it. Broadway is specialized and problematic. It's all in New York. It's really ridiculously expensive, and many of its most ardent fans must travel if they want to see what's being honored, or else wait and hope there will be tours. Those are hindrances that make the Tony telecast a night for true believers. It should be by, about, and for people who love Broadway theater, and in fact, that's who's watching. Those people are not going to turn off the awards because you take a few minutes to honor the talented folks who wrote the shows that sold 13 million tickets and grossed $1.4 billion last season. That audience is your base. You want to improve the Tonys? Start by showing greater respect for them and for the people who you're purporting to honor.
Well, another thing, too, is when people win, the acceptance speeches are usually so boring because they're usually thank yous, because people want to use this opportunity to praise people so that they'll be in good with these people when they need their next job. That may sound cynical, but I bet that's a lot of it. Why do people endlessly thank? I'd like to know who patient zero was on award show who started the thanking procedure, because really those are boring speeches. They just are. Most of the people listening to those speeches don't know who Bernie and Jerry and Jordan and blah blah blah. You get the point.
Yeah.
Who they are, you know. So it's not interesting. If somebody got up there and told a story about his life, about something that had happened to him that really influenced him, I thought it was very nice when there was that moment about asking about teachers. I thought that was terrific, and we might hear more of that if people were getting up there and not just talking about how surprised they are, how they didn't expect it, or they didn't have an acceptance speech ready, and vamping to show us that really they were that modest to believe that they wouldn't win. There's a lot of that, I believe. Me? Little me? You know, that type of thing. And it's just not something that's entertaining. So inspirational stories, I think, would go a long way in helping that. Frankly, I think what should happen from now on is everybody should submit his acceptance speech in advance. And then a committee votes and says, these are the good ones. If you win, you get to say it. If you don't win, what can we tell you? But anybody who writes a lousy acceptance speech and wins, you just take the thing and you get off. We're not going to let you talk. We're shutting off the microphones because you haven't written a good speech. I think it has to be scripted. I know that sounds absurd, and I'm only slightly joking and being slightly serious at the same time. But, boy, those speeches are mostly lousy.
Well, I completely agree, but of course that's also true of the Oscars.
Oh, every one of them. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Sure. Oh, yeah. No, still, I think it's one of the reasons why award, and you know, don't forget the Oscars are going down, too. The award shows just aren't doing as well as they used to.
All the award shows have a ratings problem as we splinter further and further.
Right.
But, Peter, you know, the rumor is that all the gowns this year had to be approved by Anna Wintour. So if they have to approve the gowns, why not approve the speeches by WGA or something like that?
Right. I agree. Yeah,
and when someone gives a speech that's not boring, like as for example Kelly O'Hara, it's just so delightful and wonderful.
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, Kelly.
I'll have to admit that was a surprise to me, and
it was a shock, you know. And I have to say that all of us picked other people, and in a few categories, we all sort of missed the boat, or shocking one was the best featured performance by an actor in a featured role in a play.
Yes.
When Richard McCabe won for the audience. I think everybody tore up their ballots. They're like, I'm out of the contest now, you know?
And yes.
It's funny. John Maas, our constant companion and critic, wrote me and said, where are your predictions now? Forgotten. You know, his best Joel Grey MC voice, you know, and I certainly see his point. Though we have to admit that Michael always says that he's terrible at this to begin with. So,
it's true.
Well, I have to say that, you know, something that is beautiful about the Tony Awards every year is that this is not a business full of humble people, and this is a night that humbles many, many people. There's very few people that are go away unfazed. They're not surprised over one thing or another. Where was the other one we had that we all missed? Was Ruthie Ann Miles? Yeah, we all missed that one.
Oh, did we?
Yeah,
I really thought that Judy Kuhn would win almost as a lifetime achievement type thing. Mm-hmm. By the way, I thought Ruth Miles was tremendous. Don't misunderstand me.
Yeah.
But still, I did think that she was going to not emerge victorious. I love the iPhone. Is she the first one to use an iPhone as an acceptance speech on the Tonys?
I was wondering that.
I don't know.
James, you're a techie.
Yeah, no, I can't think that I've ever seen one up there before, but she used it well.
Indeed. Yeah.
Well, to me, although Kelly was surprising, it I wouldn't say shocking.
No.
No.
But
no.
Richard McCabe and and Christian Borle.
Christian Borle, yeah.
And Michael Cerveris.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm gonna say in terms of Christian Borle, when I saw the workshop of Something Rotten, and certainly faithful listeners know that I saw the workshop, I was convinced he was going to win. As time went on, I wasn't. I didn't think he was going to win in that category. In fact, I even thought Brad Oscar might have a better chance than he did in that category. But there was such commotion over Andy Carl, and given the fact that that role has won a Tony before for Kevin Klein, I did expect that. I guess this proves what teachers always tell you when you take your college board exams. The first answer you put down, don't change it. The first answer tends to be the right answer. So I was right in the fall with Christian Borle, but I wasn't right thereafter. I'm delighted for him. I think he's certainly giving a tremendous performance in the show. But, you know, again, I didn't feel any sense of outrage about what happened last night. It wasn't a case where, you know, there were so many worthy people this year. That it wasn't like so-and-so was robbed. It's a case that voters to me seem to like. It wasn't they loved some people less, that they loved some people more, to paraphrase William Shakespeare, who probably stole the line from Nick and Nigel Bottom. But altogether, I do believe that it was just such a good year that anybody could have emerged victorious.
Michael, it surprises me. Did you just say that you were surprised about Michael Cerveris? Because I have in my notes that you picked him to win last week.
Did I?
Yeah, I have it written in my notes that you picked Michael Cerveris to win Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role in a Musical.
But did I say who I thought should win or who I thought would win?
Oh, that's too complex for my notes.
I mean, like Peter, I want to make it clear. All three of these people, or four of these people that we mentioned, Kelly O'Hara, Michael Cerveris, Richard McCabe, and Christian Borle, are eminently deserving. It's just I'm saying in terms of the buzz I was hearing and also various reasons why I really, except for Kelly, because I wasn't really sure about that one. I really was not. But the other three, I would never have picked those three people as who would win. So interesting. It keeps it interesting, doesn't it?
Oh yeah. Yes. You know, it's as I said, it's humbling because every time I think I know a little bit about Broadway, I just look at my Tony Award predictions every year, and I'm so wrong every year. I mean, how much have I been talking about how great I love Kelly O'Hara for years and years, and I didn't pick her.
You have.
I didn't pick her. I picked Kirsten Chenoweth.
Right.
But I'm just so relieved that. You know, there have been years when I thought there were some truly undeserving winners, and that just makes me sad. In this case, I don't think there was a single one in terms of someone who really was not good, you know, or just whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's you know, we're only less than 24 hours later after the last award's been given out. And we've heard the news that The Visit is going to close, which is not really a tremendous surprise given the grosses that they were doing, and they didn't really lock up anything last night. But so what do you think is going to be the fallout of this? Do you think American in Paris is still going to wrap the kind of weekly numbers that it's been wrapping, and Finding Neverland that we talked about before is still wrapping over $1 million a week? Do we think that that's going to keep going through the summer?
I predict that it won't affect American in Paris at all.
And I agree.
As for Finding Neverland, it's hard for me to say. I mean, I loathe it so much, and I agree that that number didn't do anything positive for it. So I think that might hurt, but I'm not sure, you know, how other people perceived it.
Peter, what do you think?
Pretty much the same, actually. What I'm more interested in is if It Should Have Been You is going to get a bounce, because Lisa Howard did such a wonderful job with her song. It was late in the evening. Yeah. People tune out, you know. So we talked about 6 million viewers. There were 6 million viewers seeing her. I predict American in Paris is going to be as strong as ever. it's not going to suffer at all, because this is a case where Fun Home, too, which is doing 100% business now or even a little more, is now really going to be a white-hot ticket because, of course, the place is so small.
Yes.
I wonder if they feel that they should have been in a bigger theater now that this has happened. But
I think it's great that it's where it is. I think
if they were in a bigger theater, they might not be where they are today.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Yes,
and may I say, I thought Sidney Lucas, who I believe I picked to win until you two convinced me otherwise.
Uh-oh,
and then I changed my vote.
You are easily led, Michael.
I changed my vote, as Peter said we should not do. I thought she was extraordinary.
Me too.
Not only, I mean, she was so great in the show itself, but to have that kind of focus in a national TV show before millions of people in that huge, incredible barn of a theater. I think she's extraordinary. I thought she was brilliant and beautiful and amazing.
And so the chat in the press room last night was that that Fun Home is being bandied around for a movie. A possible make.
Yes, I have heard that.
Oh, how wonderful.
So, you know, that could, you know, if they do make it quickly and put her in there, it could be the making of a huge star. That's, she was extraordinary. That it's one of the things that I hear from everybody.
And if they don't do it quickly, maybe she could play the other part.
Yeah.
right. Good point.
Middle Allison,
yeah.
If they really drag it out, she'd be older Allison. So it's really a tremendous win for Fun Home, and the discussion about, you know, are they going to do the children's number, the fund number, that's the safe number, or are they going to go out there and do the edgy number, as Michael Riedel says, will not play in Peoria. And they did it, and they went out there unabashedly and knocked it out of the park. What a stunning representation of Broadway. There.
And another, another thing that everyone seems to agree about except the producers is that better to do a full number than a medley.
That.
Oh, medlets.
20th Century really suffered there because Kristen Chenoweth, they wanted to showcase her, obviously, and I understand why. However, the songs she has in the show are very specific songs, and they don't lend themselves terribly well to an audience saying, I understand what's going on here. Mm-hmm. I don't think Veronique would have helped them anymore. Never might have helped them a bit more. But Babette is such a strange number involving, you know, schizophrenia, so to speak. You know what I mean? And, you know, under those circumstances, it must be very hard for people to understand what's going on. They would have been much better off.
Although they cut all of that out. I mean,
I know. But I mean, you know, the thing is, it's such a strange number, no matter what happens. So under those circumstances, I think they would have been much better to do the title song. But of course, she's not in it. You know, and that title song is so wonderful. I mean, we got a smidgen of it, but and I was really gearing up to hear the whole thing, and then suddenly it didn't work out that way. Mm. And it's really too bad that it played out the way it did. And, of course, it's limited run, so it doesn't matter all that much. But still, I do think On the 20th Century would have put a better foot forward if indeed it had done the title number, Christian and no Christian.
But, I mean, Peter, if 20th Century had pulled out Best Revival, don't you think that there was two press releases set to go out this morning? One that says, you know, the one that we got this afternoon that said 20th Century wraps up July 19th. It must close because we have another show in back of it. And if they had won, that they would have been 20th Century extends through the fall.
But isn't it true that... I'm sorry, isn't it true? I thought I had heard that she also had concerts booked.
She might, but I don't think that she would have been tremendously irreplaceable. She's very good in the show. This is not a knock on her. But I think they could have got somebody who people would have been interested in seeing.
Really? So. For 20th Century?
Yeah, I do.
Oh,
what
boy,
makes you say no? Because, do you mean because of the vocal demands? Is that why?
I get primarily that. I mean, Maren Mazey was brilliant when she did it. I don't know if they would give that to her at this point. I can't offhand think of anyone who, I mean, unless it was someone who wasn't a name, and they felt that at this point they could go with an unnamed.
Hmm. Does Sutton have the voice?
No.
No.
My.
No, I love Sutton. No, she doesn't have that type of voice. It's almost an operatic soprano. Gosh, I don't think she has that type of voice.
Well, I mean, they have the Glinda Factory over at Wicked. You know?
Yes, but how many of those people are names?
That's,
I mean,
right. That's true. Yeah.
And come to think of that, didn't Annalee Ashford replace Kristen? She might have been great in it in 20th Century. She also has.
Hey, that's one we got right.
That I got it totally wrong. I was like, there's no way. It's because the show is closed. No way. I mean, I was
I thought you got it too. Michael, you and I felt that she'd win. Is that right?
Yes, I believe so. And so well deserved. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and
I was surprised it didn't get revival. I really was. Mm-hmm. Skylight is a fine production, no question about that. But it was business as usual for Skylight. It was almost like seeing it the first time. So, under those circumstances, I'm much more impressed by You Can't Take It With You, that played around with it a little. I mean, even the set was a little different in terms of that outside the house and what have you. It was such a monumental effort to do that. I mean, that big payroll, all directing all those people, all that goes with that, the craziness that goes on, the special effects, the sets having every inch of it covered with memorabilia, all that kind of stuff. I really felt that it was going to win. That was a surprise for me. I did not think Skylight would win that prize.
Who would have thought that, you know, that You Can't Take It With You is going to win as many awards as Something Rotten.
yeah. I did feel the air was coming out of the balloon and Something Rotten as time was going on. The only thing I was wondering was Kevin McCollum, who's an astonishingly smart producer, having some sort of secret weapon. Was he going around town talking it up? And was he doing it for Hand to God too? There was a scenario in my head where Hand to God and Something Rotten were going to do very, very well because Kevin put some machine into work, some publicity machine that I wasn't privy to, I'll tell you. But it seemed to me there was no concerted effort to make that show win. I don't know if he felt we don't need it, we're going to be all right without a Tony Award, though I did notice the grosses slipped this week while they didn't for the other shows. So, and I was sorry to see that. But the Something Rotten album I now have, and listening to it, a lot of the tunes stick in my head. And while people have often said, and God knows I'm one of the first ones to talk about false rhymes and false accents, yes, there are some here. I don't think there are as many as people allege. But more to the point, God, there are so many good ideas in these lyrics. Mm. There's sharp, sharp observations. And I'm sorry that these guys didn't do better at the awards last night. I didn't expect them to, but I'm sorry they didn't.
Have you seen their ad campaign? Hysterical.
Yes.
Loser, Best Musical, 2015 Tony Award. We're in great company. West Side Story, Gypsy, yep, Oliver, Gypsy. Funny Girl, Folly, Chicago, Dream Girls, Into the Woods, Miss Saigon, Wicked, The Drowsy Chaperone, Beautiful, and Aladdin.
Yep.
Now Aladdin, I don't know how Aladdin got in there, but
well, I think they were just trying
to
name some recent one.
They were trying to even out the columns because you don't want to have an odd number of things. Mm-hmm. You know, had two columns in it, so they're hysterical. They're, you know,
they are. Yes, they are.
And don't you wish that every show could open in a season where it got what it deserved? Mm-hmm. Compared to the competition, you know, and
well, that brings us to On the Town and the choreography, certainly. I mean, so many years we have had choreography from Hunger, and to think that this year we had such magnificent choreography in On the Town and it didn't get the award, while next year probably would have, or last year probably would have. I mean, it's just so sad that such exemplary work didn't get the prize where we know that it could have been so many other seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm not sure where I would have put this in, but I liked Hand to God wasn't represented as much as I would have liked to have been. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't know, you know, where they would have won that somebody else would have lost. And mm-hmm. I don't disagree, as you had mentioned before, nothing that happened last night was a travesty to me.
But I still, I almost kind of wish it could have been a tie between Alex Sharp and Stephen Boyd.
Yeah.
Alex Sharp, great speech there last night.
He did. And,
he had a very nice one at the Theater World Awards, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I suppose that he's going to, that's a good talent he'll use throughout his life.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's, I think they were going to see him in a few other things. Do we know if he sings?
I don't know, but I also, I didn't know because I hadn't really, frankly, read up on him that much, but I didn't know until last night that he had a, that he actually had a Brit accent. Did he say that, that his, he was from England and his parents came over here and brought him here? Is that what he said?
I don't recall. What, Peter?
No, as I understand it, he's British and applied to something like RADA, and they said no, so he came to Juilliard.
Oh, because as far as I know,
Juilliard is the fallback.
But also, I mean, I don't offhand know of any other Brits who famous Brits who went to Juilliard. That is so interesting. I mean, I'm sure there were some, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm told.
Alec
I'm not
Baldwin,
saying I'm correct.
Yeah. kidding.
I'm not saying I'm right. I'm only saying that's what I heard.
Okay, no. Oh my goodness gracious. So it's he was born in London and raised in Devon, England.
Okay.
His parents worked in real estate. So it's quite interesting. He picked up and came all the way here.
Well, I guess it worked.
At the Theatre World Awards, I met Sidney Lucas's parents, and I went into my usual speech about, I hope you parents are supporting her, because I have found from interviewing thousands of people that kids who have parental support, I don't necessarily mean financial, just emotional, do much better than kids who don't have it, that there really is a correlation I have found. And they assured me that they were 100% behind her because they were performers themselves, and they bet in Six Flags. That's so I think it's quite endearing. So something good came out of Six Flags.
Oh, boy. So it's surprising. I didn't hear any references to Hamilton. Did you hear anything about Hamilton last night? Anybody drop any jokes or lines about the up-and-coming smash,
no,
soon-to-be smash hit?
No.
I guess they figure there's plenty of time for that, and we'll be hearing
yeah,
a lot
yeah.
about it next
yeah.
time.
Mm-hmm.
But also, can anyone explain to me what is the point of having tributes to deceased people on the screen and having the camera pull way back and keep moving and zooming back and forth across it so that you can't read
it,
some
yeah.
of the names? What sense does that make? It's not even as if when the focus was on the screen, the other people, Josh Groban and the chorus, were, as I recall, not even lit that much. So it's not as if they were even doing it for that reason. I it's like they turned on the camera movement thing and just didn't bother to turn it off and kept it on all night. That was
I wonder if that was a mistake, because given the fact that he was singing so much of the song before they even showed a single name, it was bizarre to me. For a while, I was thinking, oh, I guess the tribute is simply going to be this song, and we're not going to see any names. So I guess we could look at it as better late than never, but we were all disappointed that we didn't see them from the first moment. And they disappeared so quickly,
which
wouldn't have disappeared so quickly if indeed they had started showing him the moment he sang the word when. So it would have helped tremendously.
Even if it was after the first two lines. He sang the whole song through, and then they went to, an instrumental, and then after they did the very rushed showing of the people with the ridiculous camera movement, then the chorus sang and with Josh again, and it just was
nice having everybody from all the other shows join in though.
Yes.
That was a lovely moment. I like that quite a bit.
Yes.
I saw a lot of blowback that people really didn't think that he was very Josh Groban was very good.
He was shaky at the beginning.
I thought
well, to me,
I really liked it. I liked it, but I heard a lot of stuff, but maybe I have to go back and watch it again and
well,
see.
Well, it might be that Alan Cumming really soured it for us by keep on quelling over the fact that he was going to be there. You know, that was that was excessive. Once is plenty for that type of thing, and it was really a big problem. And I think he alienated a lot of us. All right. We know he's going to be here. Stop it. We know he excites you. Stop it. I mean, really, you know. I do think, you know, that I wonder if anybody anticipated the E.T. phone home joke. I must admit, I didn't. I thought it was hellishly clever, and I really, my hat's off to them for thinking. Whoever thought of it, I think, really did a fine job in thinking of it. So I was pretty much impressed by that. Many people have since argued that, of course, that this type of thing is excessive and we don't need it, and so on and so forth. That may be, but just like when I say something rotten has wonderful ideas behind it, even if the craft isn't so good at times, similarly speaking, the idea behind it, the idea of phone home and fun home, I thought was really sharp, and whoever thought of it, I think, deserves some sort of commendation.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of the person who there was one person credited at the end with it said written by, I believe.
Nobody I knew.
I wonder, do you think that includes the special lyrics?
Yeah, I know. I looked for that too, because I was wondering about the changes we heard in lyrics, especially since there was so much of that introducing the shows at the beginning. But no, it didn't seem clear to me, unless the slate just disappeared and wasn't supposed to. But it was pretty bizarre to me that was the way it played out.
And I didn't see a credit for Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman, so I don't think it was.
No.
But I'd like to know who wrote the. I mean, I thought those little bits were clever with Kristen,
sure,
and Alan singing,
sure,
you know, little parody lyrics about the various shows.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things, one of my favorite jokes of the evening was Neil Patrick Harris when he came on and he said, "So I've put these predictions in the thing over on the side of the stage," which was a reference to last year's Tony Awards of something that very much bombed.
Oh, the Oscars.
Was it the Oscars?
Yes.
Oh, it was the Oscars. Oh, my goodness. He does too many different in such a short period of time. Oh, my goodness. That's right. It was the Oscars.
That was funny. And he said, oh, really? Oh, we're not going to do that? Oh, that's too bad, because it went so well last time.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, very, very good. All right. So anything else that you guys want to mention before we wrap up for the evening about the show? Oh, you know, we didn't talk about Tommy Toon. Did you get a chance to watch Tommy's speech?
No, but I did like the tiny musical tribute that happened, because it was nice to see We'll Take a Glass Together was happening. I thought, gee, I wonder if they would have been better off with Hooray for My Favorite Son, our favorite son. And of course, that came right after. So that was very nice to see. It wasn't as elaborate with the hand gestures as it certainly was in 1991. Still, I was glad to hear the song, as little as there was of it, but it was nice to hear it. And then my one and only sequence, too, was fun. So I didn't expect that to happen. So that was a little lagniappe that I got as a result.
I liked the tribute, too. I thought it seemed a bit rushed. If it was just a little bit longer, I would have liked it more. But I still like the idea of it. And I don't, frankly, I mean, you know, yes, I would have liked to hear his whole speech. But I don't think it was so awful the way they handled it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to have that and then have him come on and then give the award. You know, something that I forgot about until I was watching last night and hearing several of the numbers. It's so wonderful, although misleading, to hear a lot of those scores orchestrated for full orchestra.
Yeah.
when they're not, you know, sure, in the actual show, like, and especially in cases where, you know, they're very small orchestras in the actual shows, like The Visit and Fun Home. You know, it's just so lovely to hear you know, full string sections and I thought they were really beautiful. I mean, somebody puts a lot of work into those.
Yeah,
sure. It's really, sure. Really gorgeous.
Sure. Yeah, that's very true. Before we went on, I mentioned to my two comrades here that this was a year where one O'Hara beat another O'Hara because Cheetah Rivera was Cheetah O'Hara for a couple of minutes. She had changed her name to O'Hara. So she wound up changing it, of course, because she felt it wasn't ethnic enough, which indeed it wasn't. One O'Hara beat another, but I wonder if Neely O'Hara would have beaten all three of them. Who knows? Who knows?
All right. So we'll wrap up for the evening. Next week, we're going to talk about a few shows. We'll talk about An Act of God and Ever After at the Paper Mill Playhouse. Michael, what were you going to talk about next week?
Oh, I went to D.C. and saw some shows in D.C., so I'd be love to talk about those.
Great.
In Boston.
One of which...
go ahead.
Here's a lovely little thing. One of the things I saw was Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, with the two lead actors, both of whom I had never heard of before, but both very excellent. And lo and behold, one of them, Adam Wesley Brown, turned up on the Tonys last night in that sequence where they were showing the little clips of people talking about their teachers.
Oh, nice.
So wasn't that just wonderful? I mean, I was like, sure. Oh, gosh, it's that guy who was so good, who I just saw, who I'd never heard of before. You know, I mean, he's done a lot, but just not in New York. So that was a lovely little surprise for me.
Peter, great. You went to Boston, Peter?
Yes, I did. I went to North Shore Music Theater. I also went to Goodspeed to see Guys and Dolls, and I also saw a Tiny Stock production of How to Succeed, but that's for next week.
All right. So I want to remind you. I'll remind listeners that you can subscribe to these broadcasts by going to the front page of BroadwayRadio.com. There's a subscribe link. That way, each and every time we have a new episode of This Week on Broadway, it'll be automatically downloaded to iTunes for you. Of course, you don't have to listen to us in iTunes. You can listen to us many ways. One of the ways is the Stitcher app, which is an application for your iPhone, your BlackBerry, your Android device. Contact information can be found for Peter, Michael, and me at BroadwayRadio.com, as well as to links to some of the things we've talked about today. Hey, Michael, what about an answer to your trivia question from last week?
Yes, can you remind me what the question was?
The question was...
I just completely forgot about
it. I remember the answer.
Oh.
Applause.
No, that was the week before.
tell me the answer, Peter, and then I'll remember the question.
Richard Chedworth was the answer.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, it was who, what current person on Broadway this season had appeared in both a play and a musical on Broadway in the space of 3 months. And that was Kristen in Epic Proportions and You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, because – now, which one came first? Yeah, Charlie Brown was still running until just after the Tonys, I believe, and then Epic Proportions opened in September. So I remember that it was a swift turnaround, but I hadn't remembered it was that quick until I looked it up.
Peter, do you have anything for us this week?
Yes, in the 80s, there was a British musical that it came to Broadway, and it had in it a character who had the same name as an actress who was in a British musical in the 60s. So we're looking for the name of the character in the 80s and the performer in the 60s. Both were British musicals. Of course, there were more British musicals in the 80s than the 60s, but there weren't that many altogether. So I'll look forward to seeing if anybody can find this important role in the 80s musical and the far less important role, actress in the 60s musical.
All right. So if you have the answer to that thing, email us at trivia@broadwayradio.com. That way all three of us will get it. And we'll see who comes up with that one. So on behalf of Michael Portantier and Peter Felicia, this is James Marino saying thanks so much for listening to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Getting to know you, getting to know all about you. getting to like you, getting to hope you like me, getting to know you, putting it my way, but nicely. You are precisely my cup of tea. Getting to know.